speak here. Alrighty, so we are going to get started. Welcome to this how-to session on marketing your private practice from an ethical and values-based perspective. Now, my name is Gerda Muller. For those that I haven't met as yet, I've been fortunate to meet quite a lot of you already. And I will introduce myself a bit more in terms of who I am. So I am a clinical psychologist in private practice up in Brisbane, originally from South Africa. That's the accent that you are hearing. Been here 14 years and I still have it. It's probably not going anywhere soon. So that's me. I have been in private practice now for 10 years. Last year, October, was the 10-year anniversary of the Psych Professionals, which is my group private practice. Up in Brisbane, I actually have two group practices that I run as two separate financial and legal entities, because what if I one day decide to sell the one, right? And I've been doing that for the last 10 years. I should probably use my pointer, so that's the Psych Professionals. And that's just our team jumper. This is a photo of my team during one of our bi-monthly clinician PD days that we run. And in 2013, I also started yourpsychonline.com, which is an online counseling service. All right, way before telehealth was even a thing, we were doing that, and we're very proud of that service as well. So my day job these days is not really to be a clinical psychologist anymore. I'm pretty hands-off, and I guess I'm telling you all this stuff so that you know that I'm not standing here as a marketer trying to teach you marketing skills. I'm standing here first and foremost as a clinician that has learned everything the hard way through trial and error, made every mistake in the book, and you know, you don't need to make those same mistakes. I'm here to tell you all of that. So these days, my day job is to be attending events such as this, but also running my own events under the business called Private Practice Success Australia. That's been going now for around about 3 years. That's just some of my masterclass attendees. So a lot of travel involved, of course. I normally present in Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane when I run in-person events. Despite all of that stuff, I still have a family. I've got three kids. So needless to say, it's pretty hectic, and I have had to learn how to do these things really from a very, time-intensive perspective. You know, I can't waste my time, basically. That's what I'm saying. Some nice, that's all good. So a lot of balls that I've had to juggle over the years, basically. Why start Private Practice Success Australia? Well, around about 4 years ago now, I thought, you know, my two group private practices are running smoothly in my absence. And I thought, oh, geez, I've got some time on my hands. What am I going to do with myself? Because I don't want to retire yet. So I decided, I'm going to do a PhD, because that's that ultimate pinnacle, right, of academia when you're a psychologist. But I also knew that I had to do something that's going to motivate me, that I'm going to be passionate about, because otherwise I'll just lose motivation and I won't complete it. So I decided to do my PhD on psychologists as practice owners, looking at current coping challenges and success predictors. All right, and I started that whole process, and of course, stage one is the literature review. Geez, that normally almost killed me, because it's just so much reading and so much information, but it was such an eye-opening experience to really see that there's really no proper, what I would call proper, decent, practical training for us as clinicians when we leave university to know how to run a successful, sustainable private practice. So I just thought, well, I registered to do this PhD part-time. That's 6 years. That's way too long. I need to get the message out there, and I'm just going to start telling people what I know. And that's how I just decided to run my first workshop. And it has just grown from there. So that is me in a nutshell. Now, getting back then to the content for today, obviously marketing is a pretty big part of what we need to do in private practice, because you need to have clients, right? You can't do your work without our clients. And marketing for me initially, and I suspect for a lot of other private practice owners, there's a lot of fear attached to marketing. Am I right? Agree? Hands up? Yeah, cool. And there's this association of marketing being really an icky thing, right? You think it's like, oh, it's those calls that you get when you're about to sit down for dinner to eat your family meal and they're trying to sell you something. Or it's that used car salesman that sold you your first car and of course it was a dud. That's the feeling or the association that we often have when we think about marketing. And I think that is what makes a lot of us just step back and go, I'm not comfortable doing that. It's too scary, right? All right. And then of course we avoid it, which doesn't help because you can't do your life's work if you don't have clients. Make sense? Cool. All right. So before we talk about what marketing is in private practice, I want to look at what marketing is not, because that is just as important. The thing is, marketing is not about quick wins. Okay. I work with private practice owners from around Australia at all levels of their practice development. And what I find is that they really give up pretty quickly when they're doing marketing. Oh, I've done this thing, it didn't work. Or I did this and it didn't work. Okay. But they do one thing once, and that's not enough. Because marketing is not about quick wins, so we have to have patience. And marketing is also not the same as selling. And I think very often we associate those two things. It's like, I don't like doing marketing because I don't like to sell myself. I don't like to promote myself. I don't like to talk about myself. But if you really stand back and you think about this from a corporate perspective, most corporate organizations will have a marketing department and have a sales department. And normally the guys in those two actually don't like one another because they are so different and they always blame one another when they can't make their targets, because it's completely two different areas. So it's really important to know that when you are marketing, you're not necessarily selling, okay? You are doing something different, and we're going to talk about what that is. By the way, if you have any questions, just put up your hand and ask. We do have a dedicated question and answer section at the end as well. All right, so what is marketing then in private practice? So marketing within our industry, within psychology, to me, really is about those long-term strategic relationships that you are building. Okay, it's the reason why my practices are still there and thriving, even though we started out when, you know, group practices weren't really big, but we've got so many other practices around us. We've got another group private practice that actually has more rooms, consulting rooms, than my practice in my building, but we are still there. Still doing well, okay, and still growing and still making money and still servicing clients. Why? Because we actually invested in long-term relationships with the people that refer to us. That really is your competitive advantage. And I don't even like using the word competitive advantage because I don't think there really is competition, okay? Because as long as you stay focused on building your relationships, you'll be perfectly fine. All right. And marketing then is about communicating how you can help. So this is a really very important reframe, okay? So marketing doesn't equal selling. Marketing equals telling people how you can help. That's what marketing is. Agree? All right. And by the way, if you don't tell people how you can help, you're not going to be able to do your work, right? That you studied so long and hard for. So it's really important to take that step. All right. Now, getting back to values-based marketing. I think, you know, if it is hard for you to get uncomfortable by starting to do some marketing, I think it's really important to start thinking why it is that you initially became a psychologist. Okay, why did you become it? And I would say that the majority for us, we want to help people in some way or another, right? Either due to a personal experience that we've had or our family has had, or maybe you've always just been called to do this thing. And I always think, oh, maybe I should come up with a better reason why I decided to become a psych myself, because it's so cliche to saying to help people. But that's what it is at the end of the day, right? That's what we do every day. We support them. We help them to build purposeful, meaningful lives. And if you link it back to that, the value, that thing that drove you to do the undergrad, to then get the marks, to get into honors, get the marks, to get through masters, and then to get through all of that nonsense and assignments and exams, or to get all the hours that you had to get when you, if you've done the 4+2, you know, those poor guys, I feel so sorry for them, as there's so much paperwork and cases and stuff, you know, that's the stuff that drove you to get through that. And that needs to be that thing that drives you to go, hang on, I've now done this amazing feat of getting my qualification. I'm going to go sit in my office and do nothing. Okay, there's this term in marketing in general called hope marketing that marketers use. That's when you get the degree, the qualification, get the office, put up your little shingle, and then you hope that you're gonna have clients. Well, hope marketing doesn't work. Okay, you need to be willing to get uncomfortable, get out there, and start telling people, i.e., GPs, pediatricians, psychiatrists, school guidance officers, whomever it is that needs to refer to you, what it is that you can do, how you can help their patients, because they want to help their patients or the kids that they see or whomever it is. Okay, just imagine being in the seat of the doctor, not knowing who to send this child to. And it's so empowering for them to have a really good relationship with a psychologist, and they can go, that is the person that you know, little Johnny needs to see. Mm.
What really helped me was not to be afraid of the no.
Yes.
So what's the worst thing that could happen? I'll say no. Okay.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
I actually just in the last 7 days, I put up a post on my Facebook page, my Gerda Muller Facebook page, that said every no brings you closer to a yes. And if you look at traditional sales figures and conversion rates, if we want to use those business terms, the average salesperson, not that we're selling, gets a 10% conversion, okay? So you're going to get no's. That's just how it is. And let's say when people do GP meet and greets, they go, oh, well, that was a waste of time. Well, you've done one. That's not enough. Come talk to me once you've done 10. Because it's about finding your referring surgery. You're referring doctor that aligns with your values, that aligns with your niche area, that doctor that actually takes mental health seriously. And then that person is like finding that needle in a haystack. Yes, you might need to do 10, 15 GP meet and greets, talk to how many doctors, but you only need to find a couple that really gets you and aligns with the way that you work and your passion for helping that specific market that you work with, and you will be set. Okay, that comes back to building relationships. Make sense? Okay. So what I want to talk to now, because psychologists always ask me, I'm so scared to make mistakes when it comes to marketing, right? Because we do not want to get into trouble with the powers that be. And this might not be powers that be mistakes, but these is still, when I'm honest, the biggest mistake that I see practice owners make when they try and do their marketing. And I want to tell you about it because I want you to avoid doing these. All right? Cool. First one is engaging in what I refer to as 911 marketing. All right? So what is 911 marketing? Any ideas? Not you, Patricia, because you know, you've read my book. What is 911 marketing?
Help.
Yes. 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 It's like when you rock up to the practice and you look at your diary and go, oh my goodness, look at all these gaps in my diary. Okay, and it's bad enough if you're a solo practitioner. What if you've got 10 clinicians on your team, you're a group private practice owner, and you go that if these guys don't have clients, they might not be earning money, especially if you've got subcontractors, right? Or if they are employees, it will be a worry for you because you're paying your employees to sit there and they don't have clients. And you go, oh my goodness, what do I need to do? And all of a sudden your brain is going bipolar on you trying to think of all these marketing things that you can do. Who can I call? Who can I write to? Who can I fax? Who can I email? Where can I drop a brochure off? And it's so panic driven. That's not the life that you want as a business owner or as a private practice owner or as a clinician. So you really do not want to engage in 911 marketing. And I see so many people doing that. And unfortunately, what makes this even worse is the fact that 911 marketing does not work. You think it does because it makes you feel good. When you're engaging in marketing activity at that point, it helps to lower your anxiety, right? It's like, oh, well, at least I'm taking action. I'm doing something. But from a business perspective, it doesn't work. Why? Any ideas? Yes. And remember, I spoke about patience previously because the marketing you do today will not lead to clients next week. Okay. Because then again, you're running around like a chick without a head and you go, but I've got nothing to show for it. But the thing is, marketing you do today might only lead to clients next month or the month after or even 3 months later, which is why 911 marketing doesn't work. It's not going to solve your gaps in the diary problem, okay? So what's the solution then? We want to change it and replace it with marketing that is planned, marketing that is structured, and marketing that is consistent, okay? Those are the three words. And if you ever get to attend my one-day private practice success workshop, you will know that I talk about marketing at the start of the day, and I do a bit of a Falstein's mini mental state exam, and I keep on asking people throughout the day, what's the three words again? What's the three words again? Because it's so important to get that this is the type of marketing that you need to be doing. You need to plan it, you need to be very structured, and you need to do it consistently. If you do it consistently, it doesn't have to be a lot. If you do like an hour a week, okay, if you're a solo practitioner, as long as you do that hour consistently, you'll be fine. All right. So at my group private practice, the psych professionals, what we actually do is that we get together, and our next meeting is actually this Tuesday. I take my team offsite and we plan for the next 3 months. So we get together and we put together a three-month marketing strategy. So that's the plan. We go off-site, get out of the practice surroundings. We can really just focus on this. We draw up, and it's just in a table. It's not something that's typed out that takes forever. You know, again, very time efficient. We've got a column for what, when, where, all of that type of stuff that we put in there that we know exactly what needs to happen. It gets assigned to someone and everybody knows what needs to be done. Which means that the marketing in my private practice runs like a well-oiled machine. Okay, I need to get 70 referrals a month to keep my team busy. Do you think I have sleepless nights about that? No. Across the two practices, I need 140 to keep them busy. Okay, and the two practices are like 20 minutes away from one another. I don't have to worry about it. Of course, the marketing just happens because we do it in a planned, structured, and consistent manner. That clear? Any questions on that? Good. All right. Then the second mistake practice owners make is loving and then leaving your referrers. You're breaking their hearts. Okay. So when I say loving, I'm not referring to anything inappropriate. Okay, let's just be clear there. No crossing of boundaries, nothing unethical. When I use the word loving, I refer to showing them the love by reaching out to them, connecting with them, talking to them, building a relationship with them, right? Why is it a mistake to build a relationship through one activity and then to just go, done, tick that box, don't have to do it, marketing's done for the week, I'm good to go? Why does that not work? Yes. Okay. Are you going to trust somebody after just one interaction?
Yeah.
especially not if you need to send a really vulnerable mental health client their way, right? Any other reasons?
You lose the relationship.
Yes. Yes. And guess what happens next week? Maybe you rocked up, you've done a GP meet and greet. Maybe you've even taken Subway platters and some juice for them to eat because it's over lunchtime. But guess what? Next week, somebody else is doing exactly the same thing. And you're like, old news. Okay, and it's like, this was just a one-night stand. Okay, so when you do a one-night stand, it's like, you were good enough that day, now we're moving on to the next person. You don't want that. You want a relationship, an ongoing relationship with them. Okay, so my practice angels, so that's the word that I refer, that I use when referring to our most loyal referrers to the practice. Our practice angels consistently have people doing meet and greets with them. Does it worry me? No. Why not? Of course, I know most people just do one-night stands. They rock up, do their meet and greets, you know, drop off some brochures, never to be heard or seen of again. We don't work like that. So again, we don't have to be worried about it because we've got an ongoing, enduring relationship with that surgery. We don't have to feel insecure when other people go and market to them. And I can't tell you how good it feels not to have to worry about stuff like that and just to stay focused and in your lane and doing your thing. Yep.
So what are some of the things that you do to make it an enduring relationship?
Lots. So we definitely do meet and greets. We will go back for meetings with our practice angels. Okay, so every 12 months, we will, for example, run a report in Power Diary. So that's the system that we use for our client bookings. And we'll look who's the top 10 referring doctors from each practice. And we will go back to them and meet with them. They know us. But, you know, it's about touching base, going how's things. Or maybe we've got a new child psychologist. So we'll do that. We are running an open house event on the, I think it's Thursday, the 4th of October, if memory serves me right, for Mental Health Awareness Week, where we invite all our referrers to come through the practice. We have little sessions running. We do a quarterly snail mail out to all our referring doctors that's referred to us in the last 12 months. And it's a very strategic decision in terms of what we put in there. And we send regular communication to them. It's like a whole array of stuff that we do, but it's very structured. Okay. Cool. Number three, just looking at time, is not knowing where your clients come from. Okay. Where are we here? Not knowing where your clients come from. So that is the third biggest mistake that people make. So what do I mean with that? Any ideas? Yep.
Not collecting your referral source at the
yes.
Not.
Yes.
Or
exactly. Exactly. Okay. So on that note, every time a brand new doctor refers to us in the practice, we send them a thank you card. Okay. Not a letter. Okay. Not a branded thing. We send a thank you card. Okay, just thanking them for placing their trust in us and referring their first client to us. And we look forward to continue working with them. And we normally put that thank you card in a very brightly colored envelope, which means that reception is less likely to open it because it doesn't look like everyday correspondence. And we've had it, the first story that pops to mind is a one doctor that we actually sent a pink envelope to, which was a mistake because we would normally send pink or purple to the ladies. And normally we do like dark blue, light blue for the boys, for the men. Okay, it's a bit sexist, but anyway. And for some reason, the male doctor got a pink card, like in the mail. And apparently, the whole surgery was a buzz with why did doctor, you know, get this letter and from whom is it? And all of that type of stuff. And that only came out later when we actually got to do a meet and greet. And this was the first thing they brought up during our meet and greet about this incident that happened and, you know, how interesting and funny all of that was. So it's really about being different. Does that make sense? About doing things different to what other people might do it. even if it might not feel 100% comfortable, because you do want to stand out from the crowd. The marketplace is really noisy at the moment. You know, there's a lot of people going into private practice, because it's not that hard going into private practice, because there's such a need for practitioners and clinicians out there, because there's such a need in our clients, right? So you do want to make sure that you are standing out when you're doing your marketing. All right, so coming back to not knowing where your clients are coming from. So you need to make sure that you are asking every new client, so how did you hear about us? Okay. And we actually have that on our intake paperwork at the practice. And our reception then inputs that into Power Diary, which means that at the end of the 3 months, so that report's already in my inbox for Tuesday, I've got a report that's been run through Power Diary that tells me in the last 3 months, most of the clients or what percentage came from GPs, psychiatrists, pediatricians, schools, friends, family, Facebook advertising, all that type of stuff. Okay, so we have that information when we are doing our marketing planning for the next 3 months. Why? Because you want to invest your marketing dollars, okay, into the marketing that works and into the marketing that leads to clients. The beauty about marketing is this, okay, for as long as you ensure that you get a return on investment, the amount of marketing money that you can spend on marketing is infinite. People often ask me, Gerda, so how much money do I need to put in my marketing budget? And I always go, well, how much do you have? And do you know what to spend it on? Because if you spend it on stuff that gives you a return, it doesn't matter how much money you spend in it. If you invest $10 in marketing and it leads to a $120 client or $180 client, well, you're winning, right? Why wouldn't you spend another $10? On that Facebook ad, or another $90 even on a platter of Subway to go and do a GP meet and greet if it's going to lead to $600 worth of clients. So from a business perspective, you want to know what marketing works. And for me, in my group private practice in Brisbane, and the one practice is marketed as a niche trauma center. So we do a lot of trauma work, and the other one is marketed as a niche child and adolescent center. What works for us most of the times is our relationships with our GPs, okay? I know it's a more time-intensive one, but it's the one that pays off. Yes, we also do social media stuff. We do Facebook advertising, but that market's going to be much colder in terms of, you know, saying yes to booking in terms of actually pitching up for session one and staying, because it's a cold versus a hot lead, if I need to use marketing terms. Whereas my doctor tells me that you need to go and see this person because they're the best, that's who I'm going to go see, okay? And I've got, again, that trust. Whereas on Facebook, for example, or any social media platform, you need to build up the trust over a long period. And it's even harder because there's not that personal recommendation, right? Make sense? Good. All right.
Sorry, quick question. How do you meet the GPs? Because often they're very time restricted.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you arrange that?
Various strategies. There's one strategy that you guys won't like. You want to hear it? But it works.
Rock up as a
No. Well, you can do that, but that might be hard for over time. Who wants to hear the strategy that you're not going to like? Okay, I want to see at least half the hands. And I know, because a lot of psychologists tell me, oh, I don't like that. Well, it works. Okay, so there's a company, they just changed their name, but if you Google this, it should bring up the new website address. It's called Our Drug Rep. Have you heard about that?
Yeah.
Two? Anybody else?
Our Drug Rep.
Yeah. Our Drug Rep. Now, a psychologist doesn't like it because we don't like to feel like drug reps, right? It's like, oh, it's demeaning. Okay, but what you do is you go onto Our Drug Rep. You register as a drug rep, okay? On that platform, there will be local surgeries listed. So I hop on there, we put in our postcode, And up pops up this list of GP surgeries. And they have appointment times. You go, which one suits me? Click, book in. Done.
Great. What happens when you find another drug?
Well, what we did before we did it, I got my provisional psychologist, so I employ a provisional, and I got Andrew to call each and every surgery and ask the question, and everybody said, we're more than happy, we prefer you to use this system. Because it makes it easy for them.
Okay.
Yes. Makes it easy for them.
OurDrugRep.com.
And I think the name has changed to RX something. But if you put that in, it takes you automatically to the new website. Now, if you are operating more in rural locations, you might not be able to use it because the GPs needs to be listed on it, right? And if your doctors are still very old school, and we find that's a bit more in rural, right, we still love them to that, no offense to that. They don't really use a lot of that technology, but if you're in the metro areas, it's definitely the way to go. And then we will still, if there's a specific surgery that we want to target and they're not on there, then we will just call them up, speak to the practice manager and get something organized. Cool. All right. Time. So my marketing secret recipe. So whenever I actually do anything in my practice, because people often look at me and go, oh, good, are you breaking the rules? And I go, no, I'm not breaking any rules. I just have a really good idea of where the line is, okay? And I'm not scared to walk up to the line and go, okay, so this is where you are, and this is how far I can take this, okay? But I will never step over it. And this relates not only to marketing, but everything that I do in my private practice has to adhere to the 3E rules, and that is ethical, easy, and effective. Because first and foremost, if it is not ethical, I should not be doing it, right? So I always ask myself these questions whenever I decide to do something new. Is it ethical? If not, I can't do it. Is it easy? If it's not going to be easy, I probably won't do it. Okay, I like things to happen pretty fast. And I don't like things to be complicated. And is it effective? If it's not effective, I shouldn't be doing it because I'm wasting my time, right? So those are the three things that I always look at. Now, if you are scared about doing advertising in your marketing, I want you to write down this link, okay? I could take you through all that information, but it would be a waste of time because this is the best handout that I have come across on the APRA website that talks you through what you can and can't do in your advertising. And it's not the usual gray stuff. It's very clear cut with examples, what you can do. If you're doing this, it's wrong. This is how you change it. So do yourself a favor, download it. I've got a copy on my desk at all times. So sometimes if I go, hang on, I can't remember 100%, I just look at that. I think it's more or less 4 pages. It's an amazing resource. So make sure you get that. Okay, so we come almost to the end. Got 5 minutes left, yes. So, and we'll do questions answer after this, but I thought I don't have the time to fit in everything that I want to talk about marketing related. So everybody that is here in this room, if you email me to that email address, I will send you a link to a social media training that I did for one of my programs for free. It runs for just under an hour, around about 55 minutes, where I actually spoke about the best social media to use, why, how to do it, what to look out for, mistakes, all of that type of stuff. Okay, so if you wanted to do social media, maybe you've been scared to do it because you're not sure what can and can't I do, you don't want to get into trouble, email me and I will send you the link. Okay, and you need to email me because I normally sell this program on my website, but I'm going to give it to all of you for free. Okay. Any last minute questions until we need to be out of here? Yeah.
What kind of percentage do you put aside for your marketing budget?
I really don't have a percentage for it. I will use as much money as I have available for marketing. Because we do, we run break-evens at my practice. So we'll input at the end of every year all the expenses that we had. We look at last year, we add 10%, and which includes marketing expenses that we engaged in last year. we add 10%, we add in what profit do we want to make, and it will tell us how many clients do we need to come through our practice doors every day, right? And if I've got any extra money, I will put it into marketing 9 out of 10 times. But I don't stick to a set percentage, because investing in marketing for me is investing in getting clients in that we can do the work that we train for, that we can help them, right? So that's linked to that values-based thing as well. Yep.
What sort of time frame do you put aside for the second visit, or the third visit, or the fourth visit to the GP?
However long they want us there. So in terms of preparing for a GP meet and greet, I normally have a 3-minute spiel, okay, in terms of being very clear and to the point, and then I will prepare 3 questions that I want to ask them. Because I don't want it to be them just eating their lunch and me talking at them. I want to have a conversation. I want to build a relationship. So I will decide. And those questions might change from time to time. One of my best questions, though, that normally breaks the ice and get them to have a bit of a chuckle, is I will ask them, okay, so I'm really interested to hear, what is that one gripe that you have about working with psychologists or referring to us? And then they normally laugh and they tell me, psychologists are really bad at sending us their reports. That's remained the number one complaint from doctors for the last 10 years. And then we might ask questions like, you know, how long do you like your reports to be? What do you like? So we really want to find out, what do they want? So we can give that to them, right? Does that help?
Yes, and then how do you get them the next time?
Pardon?
What are you using for your excuse to see them the next time?
Well, just tell them, we haven't seen you for more than 12 months. We want to come in and say hello. And sometimes we will have new team members, then we'll have that. Or we'll go, you know, we've got some new stuff that we want to talk to the doctors about. And the thing is that they're happy to let us in because they're our practice angels. So those are the ones that we go back to over and over again. If it's a new referring surgery, we won't just do GP meet and greets. We'll do a GP meet and greet. We'll have a mail out. We'll almost like have a launch process in terms of what type of communication are we sending out to this brand new surgery that needs to happen to build the like, know, and trust factor. Yeah?
What if there's, a lot of the percentages of the GPs, and you sort of notice that there's going to be 2 of them who are real angels, and for your next meeting week, they're the 2 you really want to see.
Mm. Yes. Yes. So if it's that type of practice angel relationship, I will actually get a reason to call the doctor about a mutual patient. Okay, and I'll go, you know, I'll have the conversation about the patient. I'll go, you know, it would be really great to touch base face to face again. You know, what time do you have available in the next 2 weeks? That's the way. And then I'll go, oh, is Dr. So-and-so also available? Maybe you can let them know that I'm coming, and get the GP to do it. They do it. They're real people, actually. They do things like that. Or otherwise, I will call the other doctor and say, oh, I'm actually touching base with Dr. So-and-so. We're coming in. We'd love for you to join us for coffee. And just do it like that. It's just a relationship. Makes sense? I'm going to be kicked out. So that's it. I hope that was helpful. I am exhibiting, so if you want to come talk more to me, I'm in the exhibition area. I'm here for the next 4 days. Come and ask me any questions. Be sure to email me if you want that training, and enjoy the rest of your Congress. All right. Thank you.